The Frog 7 has continuous coverage from 500 kilohertz to 30 megahertz in 1,000 kilohertz wide bands on the Wadley loop principle. It will actually tune as low as 300 kilohertz with somewhat reduced sensitivity, and as high as 31 megahertz with full sensitivity. For general listening and some DX applications, it's an excellent receiver. I'll cover both its good points and its drawbacks. Calibration marks appear every 10 kilohertz, although slightly expanded toward the ends of the 1 megahertz wide range. There is room throughout for there to have been marks every 5 kilohertz, and in casual tuning, it's easy to be 5 kilohertz off. According to accompanying literature, it is unavoidable that the scale is not completely linear. There's considerable parallax. This means the angle of your eyes is another critical factor in reading frequencies. But the hairline can be slid to accommodate both these variations. There is no product detector, though the USB and LSB markings might make the FRG7 appear to have this feature. The settings are simply beat frequency oscillator fixed tuned slightly above and below the AM frequency. Thus, you cannot zero beat a given signal, switch back to AM, and find the station precisely in tune. A fourth setting of the same switch activates a noise limiter, which has very little effect, nor does it cause enough audio distortion to make using it objectionable. A major weakness of the FRG7 is that it overloads, especially by super strong signals on the 6 megahertz band in the evenings. Rather than an RF gain pot, there's a three-position attenuation switch with somewhat confusing labeling. The middle position is full gain. The DX position attenuates somewhat, and the local position attenuates the most. Perhaps the Japanese designers are yet to realize the signal levels we have to cope with in North America and in Europe. And it's easy to forget the attenuation is on DX when retuning. During the evening, it is usually necessary to receive in the local mode in order to eliminate cross-modulation here in North America from Sackville, Bonaire, or Antigua. This doesn't deter listening to stations of medium strength, but it prevents reception of weaker stations that could be heard on other receivers less subject to overload. The FRG7's sensitivity is excellent throughout the tuning range. It can pull in weak stations very well, provided there is no interference problem. This sensitivity advantage is diminished by a different factor, however, selectivity, which is really vital and necessary for general listening. Even when tuned very carefully to the center of a channel, if there are stations of equal strength, 5 kilohertz above and or below, a slight 5 kilohertz heterodyne can be heard. And when trying to hear a weak station, 5 kilohertz from a strong one, or between two strong ones, let alone closer separations, the FRG7 allows the strong signals to mask the wanted signals, no matter how carefully you tune. The skirts are not steep enough. A three-position audio filter labeled tone is nice to have, but only superficially affects selectivity. The low position reduces the 5 kilohertz heterodyne, but of course also sacrifices full audio quality. With a strong signal such as RN Belair, the FRG7 provides excellent audio fidelity, proving that shortwave need not be a lo-fi medium. The built-in speaker is front-mounted. The narrow tone control position improves intelligibility of some bassy AM transmissions and reduces very low-pitched heterodynes. The low position really cuts the background hiss on SSB. Some U.S. suppliers of the FRG7 offer a ceramic filter selectivity modification, which should be well worth the price for those planning to use it primarily as a DX receiver. And for those to whom exact frequencies are important, there's another modification available with direct frequency readout. Since the BFO is fixed-tuned and calibration is not precise, it's difficult to measure frequencies closer than 5 kilohertz. However, the Wadley loop design means that each 1,000 kilohertz range exactly matches every other one. So a listener familiar with the shortwave broadcasting bands can determine frequencies outside those bands by tuning the megahertz selector only to a band where stations operate on known frequencies with the same last three digits. Fortunately, there's at least one SWBC band covering all portions of the 1,000 kilohertz wide range. Or the medium wave band can be used as a frequency reference, especially at night. This feature also makes the FRG7 easy for blind listeners to operate. One can count the megahertz whipping by without needing to see the red LED as a guide. And the LED is in a position such that many sighted listeners will find their right hand blocking the view.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
And you'll be able to hear Glenn Hauser's diagnosis of the Frog 7
by 2 next week.
Where we now have Glenn Hauser with his report on the FRG 7 by 2. Ease of tuning is one of the FRG 7's nicest features. It takes only 5 seconds to go from 2 megahertz to 28. In fact, it takes longer, but only slightly, thanks to a spinner, to tune within a 1,000 kilohertz range than between bands. Of course, the preselector must be peaked to match retuning, unless there is a strong signal. To accomplish retuning in the shortest possible time, however, 3 hands are required. Stations that happen to have 2 transmitters near the same hundreds position on different bands allow you to switch easily between the two. For example, Radio Nederland on 11-730 and 9-715. The CBC Northern Service on 9-625 and 11-720. And Israel on 7-412.5 and 9-435 kilohertz. Gone are the 910 kilohertz double IF images that are such an annoyance on simpler receivers. However, if the megahertz tuning is not carefully centered on the preselector effect, there can be images that are exactly 1,000 kilohertz away. But this is not a serious problem if the receiver is properly operated. Birdies, that is, carriers generated internally because of the receiver design, are quite present. But they become obvious only in the relatively vacant higher megahertz, especially when tuning with the BFO on. Fortunately, they're easy to tell from genuine signals, since most birdies jump wildly to another frequency with just a touch to the megahertz dial. 2 miniature jacks on the front panel allow you to record bypassing audio filtration and at a fixed level. Or earphones may be plugged in, cutting off the speaker, but with the volume and tone controls engaged. A 3rd jack is on the back for external speaker. All controls are conveniently on the front panel. The dial lights can be turned off to conserve battery power. The light behind the band selector is not masked well enough to make it obvious which preselector band is in use. The tiny horizontal S meter is hard to read and inaccurate. The one on my Frog 7 is not even properly zeroed. The antenna and ground connections on the back, as well as a muting connection for use with a transmitter, are spring-loaded, making the wires easy to connect and disconnect. The receiver functions very well on a short piece of wire attached to the main antenna terminal, but there is no built-in antenna. A separate medium-wave terminal allows loop and long wire to be connected at the same time. Without any medium-wave antenna, you may think the receiver is insensitive on medium wave. Also on the back are external DC input, fuse, antenna coax input, and 2 posts for winding the AC cord. It measures about 35 by 35 by 17 centimeters. The Frog 7 fits nicely on a desktop with feet raising the front end of the receiver. However, it's easiest to operate when at eye level, especially for that S meter. There are more feet on one side opposite the carrying strap. It's lightweight and easily portable, though 8 decibels do load it down a bit. It lacks the drawbacks of receivers, which are designed primarily as portables. However, I've seen a report from Australia that the battery power is quickly exhausted. Among some minor irritations are the lack of overlap between bands, so that, for example, when listening to the 49-meter band, you can tune down only to 5975 or so, and to hear stations between 5950 and 5975 kilohertz, it's necessary to tune all the way to the other end of the 1000 kilohertz dial. There is some backlash on the kilohertz tuning, making SSB a little more difficult than necessary to tune. However, after a brief warm-up, there is negligible drift. Some models have a fine-tuning control, but mine doesn't. And for those of us weaned on tube-type communication receivers, the FRG7's instant-on capability is a luxury. The FRG7 has many things to recommend it, outweighing its drawbacks, I feel. It is ideal for general monitoring, but without modification it will disappoint serious DX listeners chasing weak signals on split frequencies in heavy QRM.
Some international medium wave DXers are dissatisfied with it for the same reason. However, I hear some splits on it, such as Red Hill Jumbo on 545 kilohertz, with no trouble at all. It is the ideal first receiver for new shortwave listeners. While $300 or so might seem a lot to risk, people routinely pay twice that much for color TVs capable of receiving only a few nearby stations. In contrast, a good shortwave receiver, of course, provides hundreds of stations from all over the world.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
And now that we're on the subject of new receivers, next week on Radio Nederland's DX Jukebox, Jim Rostenhardt will be looking into the new Sony ICF 5900 for us.